This show was first broadcast on Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. For more information on our lineup of shows and the role we play in the media, visit freefm.org.nz.
Welcome to The Science Bug. I'm Morgan Marion.
And I'm Simon Connolly.
Here we are again to tell you all about the Bug of the Year competitors for 2024. Remember to cast your vote soon so your favorite is crowned champion.
We're back.
We're back with more Bug of the Year. Yeah. More nominees.
So last week we went through the first half of the nominees. This time we're going to go through the second half. As a reminder, if we haven't reminded everyone enough, you can vote for all of these at the Bug of the Year website, and you really, really should, because, you know, if the one you pick gets crowned, then that's something you can boast about to all of your friends.
Forever.
Forever.
Well, who's the first nominee on your list, Simon?
First on my list, well, we kicked off last week with a spider, and we're going to do the same this week, because we have another much, much bigger spider. We have the Rungatira spider. Otherwise known as Dolomedes schauslandi. I know the scientific name because I know a lot about Dolomedes. I'm a real nerd for them. As their name suggests, they're native to the Chatham Islands, mostly found on Rangatira, but I'm told that they're on some of the like kind of the more unoccupied islands. Like a lot of the stuff on this list, they do not do well when you expose them to invasive mammals because they're so big and chunky. They tend to get eaten, I think.
When you say big, how big do you mean?
Oh, big. I believe the technical term is chonky. They're like, they'd sit pretty comfortably like in the palm of your hand.
I'm currently looking at the palm of my hand kind of thinking.
Yeah, and imagine a big like with a big spider with a really big fat abdomen and just covered in hair. That's what these guys are. Like most spiders, the females are bigger than the males and the females can weigh as much as 5 grams, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it's the same as a rifleman bird. So it's a spider that weighs the same as a bird.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're just starting some of the research on these ones, but if they're anything like their relatives here on the mainland, they'll do all sorts of weird stuff, including like breaking their genitals when they mate and females eating the males and crazy stuff like that. Morgan's shaking her head in disbelief. And apparently, like, all the fishermen around those islands tell real tall tales to each other about, like, oh, yeah, my mate Jeff landed on that island and he was carried away by a horde of venomous spiders and he was never seen again. Maybe not quite like that, but they tell stories about like, them crawling all over you and biting you and stuff. And apparently, if you're on the island, they're just, like, everywhere. Like, you open the long drop and there's, like, three just, like, scurrying around inside the building and stuff like that.
That sounds amazing, though. For them to be in such high density is a dream. I wish all of our insects were like that in the mainland.
Yeah, well, it's one of those things where you have an island that's, like, essentially almost untouched. Like, if there were invasive mammals, they've all been cleaned off, and the stuff just bounces back and flourishes if it gets the chance to, you know?
What do they eat?
I mean, this is a guess based on their kind of relatives that I've worked on. They would like to eat anything that is like smaller than them and not actively threatening. So that's like worms, flies. I imagine like they could take like grasshoppers, wetter, stuff like that. And probably each other. They probably eat each other.
My next nominee is the New Zealand praying mantis, Orphodera novaezielandia. So it's one of two species of praying mantids in New Zealand, but this one is native to here.
Because people might be familiar with the it's more common these days, the South African praying mantis.
It's more common to you up in the North Island. The South African praying mantis Caphora, which is invasive and was introduced about 40 years ago, accidentally or on purpose, I'm not actually sure. Yeah, they've since started to sadly kind of compete with this New Zealand praying mantis because the females of Myomantis caphora are really attractive to the New Zealand males who try to mate with them but just get eaten in the process. It's kind of a sad story.
Yeah, that's, I think if you're a praying mantis, you're a praying mantis male, you're okay with the possibility of being eaten, but you at least want to mate with the right female first, and they don't even get that chance, I guess.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, praying mantids are famous, renowned for their sexual cannibalism. But in the New Zealand praying mantis, it's rarely cannibalistic. They prefer to snack on flies and other critters than fellow males.
So the males can just walk away after mating safe and sound?
Yeah. Wow. They just...
And if people are wondering which praying mantis they have like nearby to them or in their garden, how do they tell the two species apart?
It's actually quite easy once you know what to look for. So the New Zealand praying mantis has a much wider, thick thorax that's the same width as its head. And then the other really obvious sign is that it's got a blue dot on the inside of the forearm.
So the actual like praying bit of the praying mantis is kind of like these like reaching, grabbing arms that it grabs stuff with. It's got a bluey purple dot in there.
On the inside. So you've kind of got to make it reach an arm out and then spot it right in there.
Yeah. I mean, this is a returning one from last year. And
it is.
They've used the exact same photo as last year because it's such a brilliant photo of this praying mantis just holding up its little arm with the purple dot showing, just going, "Hello, I'm a praying mantis."
Yeah, but they're just so cute and they're so neat. And their praying mantids are one of my favorite insects really to look at because they've got a personality that really shows, you know, they'll look at you and turn their heads. And I think it's the way that they turn their heads really that makes it quite personable. Another difference between the two species, while we're on it, is the egg caser, the Ufika. The South African Ufika is really messy and white compared to the New Zealand praying mantis egg case. It's quite neatly laid rows of eggs all put together. So,
my favorite thing about praying mantises is that when they hatch out of the egg cases, they don't have like a larval stage. They just come out as tiny little praying mantises, and it's absolutely adorable. I deliberately like leave them around my house so that I can have tiny little praying mantises running around. It's great.
So cute. Yeah. It's so cute. On to any other cute nominees on your side?
Well, I think if I was to describe this one as cute, that would be somewhat controversial. This is another terribly named one, perhaps the worst named one on this list, but it's still an excellent one. This is the Mount Cook flea, which is not only found on Mount Cook, it is found on Mount Cook, but it's found on other mountains as well, and it's not even a flea.
Oh.
Yeah.
What is it?
So technically it's a cave wetter, but that in itself is also a terrible name. So I was told this recently, and if I think it's really cool that cave wetter are related to wetter in the same way that sea lions are related to lions. Like, they're kind of related, and you can see why you would kind of name them like that, but they're not really all that closely related. And most cave wetter apparently don't live in caves like this one. It lives on the side of mountains instead.
Who chose that name, honestly?
Yeah.
Well, they sound pretty cute, though.
I mean, it depends on your definition of cute. I think they're cute, but I know a lot of people will disagree because they don't like they've got the big, like, long wetter legs, and they've got what's very distinctive of cave wetter, the really, really long antennae that's so long they kind of sweep across their entire body length, which I think is absolutely adorable, but I'm not sure I know a single non-entomologist who agrees with me.
We've got work to do, I think. So, you said they live on the side of mountains.
Yeah.
Are they pretty confined? Are they small populations?
Yeah, I think off the top of my head, yeah, they're relatively restricted to like high altitude. So that would put pretty severe limits on their population. Yeah, they're one of the few like kind of species that you find up into very high altitudes.
I'm guessing they're getting a little bit hammered by predation, no?
I mean, what on this list isn't, to be honest.
True.
Yeah. Let's go on to our next nominee.
Our next nominee is the orange-spotted ladybird, Coccinella leonina.
And this is one that people probably would think of as cute, right? People love ladybirds.
People do. People love ladybirds, not realizing what ferocious predators they are. Do you want to know a fun fact about all this?
Of course. Stop asking me if I want fun facts. I always want fun facts, Morgan.
All right. Well, one fun fact coming up. An adult ladybird can happily munch on 100 aphids in a day, and the larva can eat their body weight in aphids in a day. So they're absolutely ripping through the aphid world.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a bad time to be an aphid if there's a ladybird around.
Yeah, the farm would be quite happy with them, though.
I mean, yeah, that's another reason why they'll have such a like a positive reputation with people. They're put to good work, keeping crops and stuff alive.
So, yeah, this ladybird, native to beautiful Aotearoa, they are quite distinctive. So they've got a shiny black elytras, so they're wing covers, and they've got little yellow orange spots on there.
Oh my god, have we found an insect that actually has a good common name that makes sense? It's got orange spots, right? And it is a ladybird?
Yes.
We did it. We did it.
Well done, scientists.
We can just end the podcast now. I'm leaving. Bye.
They're found on both islands. They can grow up to 5.5 millimeters long. But they're absolutely egg factories, really, because once they do find a mate, they just lay thousands of eggs, up to 30 a day. So
that's 30 a day. Jeez. Do you know how big their eggs are, like, relative to them?
That's a good question. No idea.
Mm.
Yeah. 30 a lot would be quite, yeah.
Yeah, even if they're small eggs, that's still a lot.
That's probably why they eat so much. It all makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. You need a lot of aphids if you're brooding that many eggs. And again, just like a perfect ally of the gardener and the farmer, right? You got these little ladybirds, which are aphid killing tanks, who produce 30 eggs a day, which hatch out into more ladybirds. It's perfect.
They sound great. On to our next nominee. Who have you got on your list?
I have. Well, this is somewhat of an interesting one because I couldn't find very much about these guys. We have the scree cicada, named not for the scree noise that it makes, which it presumably does, like all other cicadas, but because they are found on scree, that is kind of like fallen rocks and shingle and stuff like that. This is another South Island species. There's a lot of South Island representation on this list. Is it just that all the weird stuff lives on the South Island?
I mean, don't tell that to the humans, but yeah.
Yes, specifically in terms of insects, all the weird stuff lives on the South Island. Yeah.
You say weird, I say cool, potato, potato.
Oh, yeah. I mean weird in a thoroughly complimentary way.
In the nicest way, absolutely.
Yeah. And yeah, whilst I don't know a huge amount about these cicadas, I do know that they're really, really pretty. There's a few different kind of subspecies of them in like kind of Canterbury region and elsewhere in the South Island. And they're just such a lovely, like, kind of green color. Like, most cicadas, they have the really nice, pretty wings, but their actual kind of body is more sort of, like, gray, browny, black, very kind of dull coloration. These guys are just, like, hot green and loving it, and I respect that.
Well, can you mimic this song? Because cicadas have pretty...
distinctive?
Pretty, yeah, distinctive individual songs to species, right?
I mean, I can give it a go. I'll apologize to all of our listeners. So they're like a... I think all of that might have been taken out by the noise filters we've got going on, but it's worth a go.
Well, it says sometimes the clicks cannot be heard, so they'd be accurate.
Well, I know if that did come through, we're sorry. I would promise that we won't do it again, but that's a lie. I can't make that promise.
Oh, jeez. Oh, God.
Before we're tempted to do that again, who's next?
Next is the amazing, the beautiful globular springtail. I just really like saying globular.
Globular.
So, yeah, globular, you can imagine. It's because they are quite globe-like. So just a huge sphere. So springtails are hexapods. So they're a type of arthropod, which were previously thought to be insects. But they're now classified into their own group, a subphylum.
Like nearly insects are the hexapods.
Yeah, they've got different mouth parts to insects, so now they're being shot into a different group. But they're still arthropods, like insects. So springtails are Calembula. That's the name of their group. They're the largest group of hexapods. And they're quite small, little, very abundant critters that live in soil. So they are mostly in the topsoil.
You'll find them in like really, really wet soil when you like turn over a log and then just a million things go boom, 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 just jumping everywhere. And then they're gone as soon as they arrive.
Exactly. You've beaten me to the punch. Is that most of them have this like tail-like appendage that's held under their abdomen, which is called a furcula. And that furcula is held under tension by another organ called a retinaculum. And when they feel threatened, they can release it and then catapult into the air to escape from whatever is scaring them.
So it's like they're kind of like pulling on an elastic band and that launches them into the air.
Yeah, they've kind of got like a little catapult that's strapped to their body that they can just unleash anytime they, you know, get the heebie-jeebies.
Or I guess we say it's like an elastic band. It's probably more like a spring, given the name.
Yeah, but they sound really cool. They sound really fun.
And is that another one that we don't know a whole heap about?
Yeah, no, we know a bit about springtails, but specifically that group of globular springtails, which are the Dicitomo, there's not much information about them. We know that, like other springtails, they live in soil and leaf litter, and they mainly eat dead vegetation and microbes. Some of them can be pests, and they eat living plants. So, you know, some good, some bad.
Yeah. And when you say, sorry, you could go back to what you were saying before about it looking like a globe, is that just because it's got like a, I don't know, a big round butt or something?
Yeah, they kind of just, the main body is just a big globe. It's just a big sphere. It's like a blue balloon.
I need your professional opinion as an entomologist. Cute or not cute?
Oh, super cute. Oh my gosh, super cute. When you look at the picture, they're super cute. Like, you just want to grab a whole bunch of them and just hug them. And they do cool stuff. They're really good for the soil. Did you know that some springtails are currently used in lab tests to test for the early detection of soil pollution?
Oh, right. That's interesting, because they'd be really sensitive to kind of what's going on in the soil.
Yeah. How cool is that?
That is really cool. The globular springtail.
It's just fun to say, isn't it? Globular springtail.
Globular. Maybe we'll just release an episode that's just 28 minutes of you and me going globular.
Globular. You're looking a bit globular today.
Well, from something tiny and globular to something sort of the opposite of both of those things, we have the Kopowai, which is the Corove's giant dragonfly. And this is another one that, like the globular springtail, is well-named because it is pretty giant and it is a dragonfly. So we're doing good here.
Is it Corove's?
Corove's giant dragonfly, I've just learned. Don't say you never learn anything on this podcast, because I certainly do. Yeah, this is one of the handful on this list that's a returning candidate from last year. So it's back and ready to fight for more. As the name suggests, it's New Zealand's largest dragonfly. These things can get to up to 100 millimeters long. I was about to say 100 meters. That would be incredible. So that's like 10 centimeters long. And for something that can fly, that's pretty impressive. This is actually not, unlike a lot of things on this list, not an exclusively South Island thing. It's mainly North Island and a bit of the kind of Western South Island, but mainly a North Island one. I think we're going to claim this one.
We'll let you take it. It's fine.
She says through gritted teeth. It's fine. It's fine.
They sound like real ferocious, like hunters. Like, dragonflies are quite renowned for being incredible flyers and being able to just take their prey on the wing.
Yeah, I mean, you can see that just like with any dragonfly, you can just watch them fly about and they kind of move and hover and can like move laterally rather than having to fly like directly forwards. And you said they take their prey on the wing, and that's absolutely true. They have this, I mean, very famously, they have the huge kind of compound eyes on their front, and those give them so much information, and they're such precision flyers that, yeah, they can just swoop down and take insects in midair, like much like an eagle or a hawk would do to another bird, just boom, and it's gone.
That's a good description. They're the eagles and hawk of the insect world.
I mean, they're the dragons of the insect world, right? That's why they were named so. Again, well-named, unlike a lot of the stuff on this list, just saying. Oh, well, man, you know, I just found a great fact about it. We're looking into Carave. So the Tereo name of the dragonfly is Kapo Kapowai, which means water snatcher.
Ooh, now that's a cool name.
Phenomenal. All right, who's next?
Next, I've got this giant snail, Powellipenta superba. It's a superb snail. But these are not your common garden snails. No, this is a species of large carnivorous land snails, which are endemic to the South Island of New Zealand.
Oh, there we go. That old chestnut, the South Island. Sorry, you're going to have to take me through this one step at a time. So you said they're giant and they're carnivorous. Talk me through both of those things.
That's right. They have huge shells measuring about 9 centimeters across. So they're pretty chonkers. Yeah. So really, they're the sumo wrestlers of the snail world. Weighing in at 90 grams.
Wow. 90 grams.
Yeah, here's a fun fact for you. You were comparing your Rangatira spider to that tiny little bird. 90 gram is the equivalent of a tui.
Wow. That's phenomenal.
Yeah. I wish people could see how impressed you are right now, because you're truly impressed.
90 gram snail, a snail that weighs the same as a tui.
Yeah, so, and Powellipenta snails used to be known as Perifanta, snails until the 1970s, but now Perifanta refers only to kauri snails, which live north of Auckland. So Powelifanta are a completely different group. Yeah, they're carnivorous, like I said, so they particularly like earthworms, and they suck them up through their mouth, just like spaghetti.
I was going to say, because I don't think they could catch anything that moves fast.
No, but if you're a worm and you get caught, it's a bad day for you. So I hope you're all imagining a huge snail just sucking up earthworms like spaghetti, because it's pretty cool.
Because why wouldn't you want to imagine such things? That's incredible.
Yeah. Do you want to know more?
Of
snails,
course.
The Powelifanta snails are hermaphrodites, meaning that they've got both male and female reproductive organs. And so they can mate with any other adult Powelifanta snails. They're not choosy. Just anyone will do. Anyone. Oh, and they can... This is crazy. They can live up to 20 years, which in terms of snail lifespan, that's crazy long.
That is incredible. But yeah, we do have to move on. So who's our next one?
Well, who's our last one?
Well, the last one on my list, I think there's one more on yours, is the velvet worm, or Peripatus. These guys are real funny looking, and they're another one that's like, if you've seen them before, you'll never forget them, and you'll know them as soon as you see them. They're what we call a living fossil, which are like, the common example is crocodiles. A living fossil is an animal that hasn't changed in hundreds of millions of years because it's such a perfect like body plan and design. These guys haven't changed significantly in 500 million years, we think, because evolution just nailed it and then left it. It's fine. It's done. It's fine. It's perfect.
If you do something right the first time, you know.
I mean, imagine doing anything right the first time.
But why change perfection? I love these guys. Tell me more.
Like a lot of things on this list, we think they're undergoing population declines due to habitat loss. But we're not really sure because they're quite cryptic and somewhat difficult to study. I have, as I say, first-hand experience of this. I have second-hand experience of this from someone who tried to work on Peripatus. And for the first like 3 months of his project, he found three individuals, not three sites where he could find them. He found three velvet worms in all of his many, many hours of searching. So we had to abandon that project and do something else, which was a real bummer.
Yeah, I've been very lucky in the past and have found three in one night.
Yeah, we think they might be like more easily found further south, but we're not sure.
Seeing them in person is an absolute privilege and a joy, seeing a velvet worm at least once in their life, because they're just there's no words. They're so cool. They're probably my favorite.
And they catch their prey by shooting like goo at it, basically, from these little extensions on their head. They've got little goo cannons on their front, which they just out of their prey and just web them up like Spider-Man.
I mean, perfection, right? When you get it right the first
time. Yeah, if you were evolution, you'd knock off for an early lunch after that.
I love just how comical they look, their little faces and their little kind of legs, and when you see them, kind of move.
Yeah. They're a lot like the snail, because you see them and you're like, oh, that's not an apex predator, but it totally is.
They're definitely ruling that world down there.
So our last entry is the Mount Arthur Giant Wetter, Morgan?
Yes, it is. Deinacrida tibiospina. They're a small species of wetter compared to their brethren. They measure around 4 centimeters in length.
I like how 4 centimeters counts as small if you're a wetter.
If you're a wetter, that does count as small, especially if you're a giant wetter. So on the scale, you know. So they are only found in the northwest of Nelson in parts of the Kahurangi National Park, living at quite high altitudes above the bush line. And we don't know much about them. We know that they've got quite low density populations, but really there's not much research that's been done about them or on their diet. Well, actually saying that, there was one researcher who was trying to find out ways of tracking them. And it seems that unlike other wetter, they don't really like peanut butter, which sucks because peanut butter is often used as a lure in monitoring methods.
So I've just learned two things there. One, that wetter like peanut butter, and two, that these wetter don't.
Well, that peanut butter is often used for monitoring, but because, quite a few wetter like it. But this specific Mount Arthur giant wetter does not like it for some reason. It's just, it's not a good lure. need to find something else. Maybe it likes jam. And in comparison to its other close relatives, it's not received a great amount of conservation work. So, like I said, we just don't know much about it.
Another one to throw money at.
Absolutely. Lots of money, I think, this one.
So, we've heard about so many cool insects. Give me very quickly your, what do you think are you going to be your top three picks, Morgan?
Oh, my top three. Oh, this is so much harder. Oh no. Existential crisis. Oh no. At least there's no stick insects in the list this time. So that makes it easier? Harder?
It takes an obvious one away from you. I mean, there's praying mantis. You love praying mantises, right?
I do. I did vote for the praying mantis last year.
Hmm.
I really like. I think I'm going to go for the weird ones, maybe. Tuatara tick.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go for the power Lethanta snail, large carnivorous snail. And I'm going to go for the velvet worm.
All solid picks. I mean, I can't go past the Rungatira spider. That has to be on my list.
Do you know what? I'll be surprised if all three of your picks are not spiders.
Well, there's only two spiders on the list, so unless I hack the system.
I wouldn't put it past you to just sneak one in.
I mean, but the thing is, there's so much other good stuff on this list. Like, I definitely want the Peripatus, the velvet worm, in there as well. So I've got Rangatira, velvet worm. That leaves me with one more. Does anyone beat Katapul? That's the question.
I think the Tuatara tick is just so cool as well. And it is an arachnid, so it kind of...
Tuatara tick is very cool, but no, it has to be Katapul, Rangatira spider, Peripatus... Just a real set of absolute apex predators.
I could have bet money on this and won.
But you didn't, so...
Well, thank you for joining us, and we hope that you vote, and we hope that you've learned something today. Hopefully you have.
And let us know what you picked. We'd be really keen to hear what other people's thoughts on this are.
So there you are, all of the contenders for Bug of the Year 2024. Who do you think will come out on top? You can cast your vote at the Bug of the Year website. In our next episode, I will be chatting to the wonderful Greer Sanger about our beloved red animal butterfly, the Kahukura.
You've been listening to The Science Bug with Simon Connolly and Morgan Marion. You can find us at Science Bug Pod on Instagram and Twitter. This podcast is made possible by Free FM, and you can find our previous episodes on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcasting app. Catch you next time!
For more episodes, use the accessmedia.nz app for iOS and Android devices, or subscribe to this podcast via Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Apple Podcasts. This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.